The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
There were a couple of pieces of podcast that were played this morning where he sounds like an absolute lunatic. I mean, he's screaming and yelling about how he wants Donald Trump to pay and to suffer like he did. This one is back from October of 2020, just to give you a sense of what he was himself saying on his podcast, and you can decide for yourself what you think his state is.
I truly hope that this man ends up in prison. It won't bring back the year that I lost or the damage done to my family, but revenge is a dish best served cold. And you better believe I want this man to go down and rot inside for what he did to me and my family.
So the reason they played all this, Judge, as you well know, is to sort of establish that when it served him personally, he was willing to lie about things, right? And then Blanche said, and you want him to go to jail now too, don't you? In other words, you're under oath. But this it would mean a lot to you. You'd be happy if he goes to jail right now.
It was an extraordinary cross-examination by Todd Blanche. And, you know, Michael Cohen's, throughout the day, Michael Cohen, when cornered in, when he found himself in a corner, he does have a pattern of suddenly not understanding the question that's being asked, or seemingly kind of, I mean, one could say buying time. But this time, Michael Cohen was cornered in what appeared to be a lie, I think, to many in the room, and had to adjust suddenly his memory that he had just testified to on Tuesday. I wonder how prosecutors are going to redirect on this, because Todd Blanche also pointed out, or got Michael Cohen to admit, that he had not seen these text messages in the prep by prosecutors. So he had apparently had no memory of those text messages, and the implication is that he concocted, you know, he was shown that there was a phone call to Keith Schiller at this time by prosecutors in the prep, and the implication certainly by Todd Blanche is that he concocted this story of what that 90-second phone call was, not realizing that there were text messages right ahead that directly related it and right after that directly related it.
Do you have doubts that that conversation happened the way Michael Cohen testified on his direct examination, that he called Trump and Schiller?
I think it's absolutely. Huh. I think it's devastating, I mean, for Michael Cohen's credibility. If I was a juror in this case watching that, I would think this guy's making this up as he's going along.
And, you know, the people we just played are not supporters of Donald Trump, right? So I think that this clearly was not a great day for the prosecution.
That makes the district attorney's office look sloppy, in addition to making Michael Cohen seem like a self-assured either fabricator, liar, or forgetful person. It casts doubt on the veracity of a ton of his testimony, and not just about who he did or didn't talk to on October 24th or October 26th. It sort of casts lots of his testimony in doubt, given the passage of time, and makes the district attorney's office look terrible all in one breath. This is a moment of real triumph for Todd Blanche. You could even hear it in his voice.
You know, the lawfare is backfiring. If you're losing MSNBC, you're losing CNN as well. Everyone on both sides acknowledging that yesterday was a disaster for these Trump-hating prosecutors. I think there was one commentator on Fox that said, you know, the discussion to this point is, well, what happens when Donald Trump is convicted? How does that affect the November election? When now we should be asking what happens when he's acquitted, or if there's a hung jury in the end. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last show of the work week. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com, or go to our Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. It plays every weekday morning here in the Central Time Zone of the United States at 11:05 a.m. Lots of deadline. We had the big graduation ball last night, lots of deadlines to meet today as we gear up for graduation on Sunday, so much so that I think I'll play my father's latest Key of David program for the second segment today. I appreciate Sam Livingston stepping in yesterday on the show just to give me a little bit of breathing room, since there is a lot going on, there always is, in that final week before graduation. So Michael Cohen is the star witness. Everything hinges on this 90-second phone call that initially I think he said he made it to Trump. Turns out it was to one of Trump's Secret Service guys. And then, as you heard there in the cold open, it was revealed yesterday that there were all these texts. He was being pranked evidently by a 14-year-old. I mean, you can't make this up. A teenager was pranking him on the phone. So he called the Secret Service or texted him about, hey, who can I talk to about these pranks? He calls him, and it's for 90 seconds, as Anderson Cooper said there. And that is supposedly the 90-second phone call where he told Donald Trump about the hush money to Stormy Daniels. Now he's saying, well, you know, I talked about the prank call, but then also Stormy Daniels. I mean, they got a lot in that 90 seconds. Wow. A star witness who's a convicted perjurer, who's a tax cheat. I mean, this is everything's hinging on him for this case. And the reporters are in the room there, and they start keying in on their Word document the moment they're seeing everything just implode. Right before them yesterday, of course, you had, I think, 10 House Republicans that were there on the front row. You have more and more people that are now showing up. And of course, this is, I mean, to Rachel Maddow, that's dangerous. For any Republican to call into question the legitimacy of this judge, this prosecutor, this is a case where there was a radical leftist prosecutor 8 years ago that said, no, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. So what was it that made Alvin Bragg change course and say, yeah, actually, I think we've got a good case here? The DOJ's passed on it before. All these meetings at the White House. Skip ahead to that. This is number 8. This is Representative Harriet Hageman. She's the one that beat out Liz Cheney in Wyoming. And listen to her exposing this lawfare strategy that they're all in on. The White House, of course, is directing it. Joe Obama. But then, as Hageman pointed out yesterday, you've got a sitting representative from New York, a Democrat, a radical Democrat, who's advising Michael Cohen. And he's also in business with Judge Mershon's daughter. She's a Democrat activist, remember? Play clip 8.
If it seems like there might be a dog in this hunt on the other side, what you need to understand is that Mr. Goldman, the novice representative from New York, actually does have a personal stake in this case. He has stated that he has been involved with the Bragg case, helping to prepare Mr. Cohen for his testimony. So he is quite closely aligned with an admitted and convicted liar and perjurer. He's also paid the Judge Merchant's daughter's firm over $150,000 for her services. So I think we've got quite a conflict of interest from Mr. Dan Goldman, the novice representative from New York.
I'd say there's quite a conflict of interest there. You may have noticed yesterday, as Republicans are beginning to push back on this lunacy. This case was so ludicrous 8 years ago, as I say, the radicals passed on it. But now they blow the dust. It's been on the shelf for a number of years. Now they blow the dust off of it and put it to trial because, well, we're in an election year. We've got to stop Trump. Anything. You heard Cohen himself say he would do anything to see Trump put behind bars. So here's the star witness. The entire case rests on a phone call that, as it turns out, didn't even happen. This is from Fox News. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche drew the court's attention to text exchanges and a phone call between Michael Cohen and Keith Schiller, Donald Trump's former bodyguard. It says Cohen, this is from October 24th, 2016. Cohen confirmed that he called Schiller that evening. Blanche asked if Cohen testified. The call was to speak with Trump about the Stormy deal. Cohen confirmed. In a text, Cohen asked Schiller who he can speak with about harassing calls from a 14-year-old prankster. As they say, you can't make this up. I mean, the comedy gold, it writes itself, doesn't it? A 14-year-old prankster. In a text, Cohen asked Schiller who he can speak with about harassing calls from a 14-year-old. Schiller responded, call me. So the bodyguard said, call me. And Cohen did. And then they talked for 90 seconds. Now, they don't have the call recording, but they've got the text messages and they've got the time of the call. I think 96 seconds. It's unbelievable. Cohen testified Tuesday that the October 24 phone call, which lasted for 1 minute and 36 seconds, was made to Schiller to talk to Trump. Blanche asked if the testimony on Tuesday was a lie because Cohen said that he called to speak with Trump. Cohen said part of it was the 14-year-old, but I know Keith was with Mr. Trump. So he didn't talk to Donald Trump, and he was texting Schiller about the 14-year-old that was bothering him on his phone. It says here, that was a lie. You did not talk to President Trump, Blanche said. I'm not certain that's accurate. I'm not certain if that's accurate. That was the response from the convicted perjurer. It says here, Cohen maintains, based on the records that he was able to review, that he spoke with Schiller, but also believes he spoke with Trump about the Stormy Daniels. I guess Schiller handed Trump the phone. So a total of 96 seconds, keep in mind. You wonder, what are the jury members? I mean, if they're losing Anderson Cooper, if Anderson Cooper knows that this was a total disaster, what does that say about this case? There's another piece here from CNN. Michael Cohen gives Donald Trump his best day in hush money trial so far. It was a great day for Donald Trump, says CNN. CNN. This is CNN. It says here, Donald Trump finally had a good day in court. The presumptive GOP nominee has often seemed embarrassed and infuriated by his first criminal trial, which has featured salacious exposés of his personal life and details of his alleged attempts to cover it up. But on Thursday, he got to savor his former enemy, Michael Cohen, wobbling on the stand under a fearsome cross-examination. I think Jake Tapper described it as sort of leading him into a trap. Just to get to the truth here, basically. So they know it was a disaster, but there's still plenty that are out there defending the regime because you always defend the regime. Even if you have if you have liars, porn stars, if those are the central witnesses, that's no problem as long as you're out to get Trump. Evidently, it's no problem if Cohen goes on his own podcast and says, I want to put Trump behind bars. Listen to the morning meltdown. I guess it's not quite a meltdown this time, and it's not like they're totally defending Cohen here. But just ask yourself, think about the tone that it would be if it was Donald Trump who misremembered a phone call from, you know, 4 years ago or 8 years ago. If Donald Trump didn't remember one tiny little detail the right way, what do you suppose they would do around the morning meltdown table? Here's their reaction to the disaster from yesterday, clip five.
The prosecution's star witness, Michael Cohen, is set to return to the stand on Monday after Trump's legal team tried to hammer away at his credibility yesterday.
Yesterday, he testified he spoke directly to former President Trump on the phone about the payments to Stormy Daniels. Cohen asserted he contacted Trump through Trump's bodyguard, Keith Schiller. Blanche accused Cohen of lying, suggesting he did not speak to Trump during that call about Stormy Daniels as he had testified. Cohen, however, insisted both topics were covered despite the short length of the call.
I just didn't think it was that damaging because the prosecution is going to concede, essentially, and they have throughout the case. Cohen's flaky. Cohen's a guy that, you know, isn't the most reliable person, but he's believable on these issues. And everybody knew that Cohen was going to get hit with his inconsistencies on cross-examination. I don't think it came to as a surprise to the prosecution. And I don't even think even the defense thinks that they completely dunked on the state's case.
That there was a discrepancy about a phone call 8 years ago? Great. He's probably wrong, but was he intentionally wrong?
There's your expert analysis. He's a liar, but on this, he's telling the truth. He's a convicted perjurer, but on this, he's telling the truth. He's perjured himself this week. That's what this amounts to. So, and this is, this has been his track record. Judge by the fruits. This case should have never, ever, ever been allowed in that courtroom. And then the judge, he's conflicted. He's got a daughter who's in cahoots with Dan Goldman. The Bragg people are meeting at the White House. It's all a coordinated assault. It's an attack on America. I mean, it's aimed at Donald Trump first and foremost. But these people, this is why their heads are blowing up. You had the spectacular food fight last night in the House of Representatives over the HER tapes. And Merrick Garland and Republicans, evidently, they're growing a spine to go after Garland. He won't release the HER interview with Joe Biden. The one that made him look senile. They won't release it. And so they were back and forth. Trump, for his part, coming out of the courtroom yesterday, he said, look, NDAs are not only legal, they're very common. I didn't commit a crime. He did not commit a crime. Just compare that with the Joe Bama DOJ sitting on the HER tapes, not letting him see the light of day in an election year when people are calling into question the fake president's mental stability. So here we have election interference again, all over the place. It's everywhere. Listen to Sean Hannity's take last night on covering up the interview that Herr had in his investigation with Biden. You know, on the documents cases where he's okay with taking documents all over the country, classified docs. But evidently Donald Trump's the only one that's to be punished for having documents at Mar-a-Lago. This is Sean Hannity, clip 7.
How it is that the Garland actually mentioned the political impact of the tape early on when their request came in to turn that tape over and transcript over that they didn't want to turn over, that it might have an impact on the election. Because withholding it sounds to me like he's trying to tip the election or the scales of the election in favor of his boss, Joe Biden.
They withhold, they steal, they cheat. I mean, my father in this book, America Under Attack, he talks about just the demonic influence that's behind this. I mean, we see Satan's spirit all across the board in our society. Look at the furor that erupted over that Kansas City Chiefs kicker. He gives a commencement address. He talks about homosexuality being a sin. He holds homemaking up as the top job of any loving mother. And he's immediately attacked. He's attacked for that. For just a basic, he's obviously a very religious man. He's speaking at a small Catholic college in Missouri. And these radicals, these demonic radicals, they just cannot stand anything that would be considered traditional or based on the Bible. I'm kind of jumping around, but maybe we could play that that clip we have of the Kansas City kicker. That's number 11, I believe.
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 2024, you are sitting at the edge of the rest of your lives. Each of you has the potential to leave a legacy that transcends yourselves and this era of human existence. In the small ways, by living out your vocation, you will ensure that God's church continues and the world is enlightened by your example. For the ladies present today, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You should be proud of all that you have achieved to this point in your young lives. I want to speak directly to you briefly because I think it is you, the women who have had the most diabolical lies told to you? How many of you are sitting here now about to cross this stage and are thinking about all the promotions and titles you are going to get in your career? Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world. I can tell you that my beautiful wife, Isabel, would be the first to say that her life truly started when she began living her vocation as a wife and as a mother. I'm on this stage today and able to be the man I am because I have a wife who leans into her vocation. I'm beyond blessed with the many talents God has given me, but it cannot be overstated that all of my success is made possible because a girl I met in band class back in middle school would convert to the faith, become my wife, and embrace one of the most important titles of all, homemaker.
And the backlash against that was swift. I mean, it came full force from the LGBTQ community. They don't like it. I mean, they are pro-mutilation. Yeah, just destroy your physical body. But you talk about moms in that way. You talk about homemakers. You talk about that being her vocation. I mean, that's language from the scriptures. And you see what they're really attacking. You can't come out and say homosexuality is a deadly sin. You can't criticize the fact that the LGBT people have a full month to glorify their perverted lifestyle. You just can't say those things. Not in a public setting like that. Not if you're a Kansas City Chiefs kicker. The Kansas City Chiefs, by the way, what was it they did? The official Twitter page of Kansas City tweeted out the name of the neighborhood that kicker lives in. Why would they give those details? Maybe they wanted people to go pay him a visit. And then they deleted the tweet later. The NFL, for its part, Harrison Butker gave a speech in his personal capacity. His views are not those of the NFL as an organization. The NFL is steadfast in our commitment to inclusion, which only makes our league stronger. We've got to include all the deviant lifestyles, and then we'll really be strong as a league. I think it was Sean Davis over at the Federalist saying that the NFL, I mean, they were quicker to come out and denounce this guy's views than they've been to actually criticize NFL players that have beaten their wives or girlfriends. And here he's talking about his wife and it brings him to tears. And the NFL's got to react immediately. Now his views don't reflect the NFL. We have diversity. Living in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, as in the days of Noah, said Jesus. That's the way that it would be in these last days before the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. You see, as I say, Satan's fingerprints, his influence just permeates the air of our society. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. I mean, here's a liar in the case of the hush money trial. He's put forward as the star witness, and it's just a joke. It's a complete joke. Listen to Jesse Waters from last night on the cross-examination, clip 4.
So they played podcasts at the beginning, and Cohen was all like this. He's like, oh, we gotta arrest this guy. I need my revenge. And he had this high-pitched, giddy, hysterical voice. And people in the court say the jurors were embarrassed for Michael Cohen. And Michael Cohen was embarrassed for himself because he sounded like a whack job. And then at that point, Donald Trump was paying very close attention, obviously, because they were playing podcasts. And then for almost the entire day, the defense counsel was just saying lie, lie, lie over and over and catching him in lie after lie, even lying about wanting a pardon. And then he was caught in another lie. Oh, actually, I did ask for a pardon. His voice was breaking, Cohen. He was shifting in his seat like this, looked extremely uncomfortable. And then it was gotten out that he was deleting texts with his wife, and he had recorded like over 100 phone calls with reporters and other people. Total scam artist.
Total scam artist. And, you know, but good partner with Dan Goldman, Representative Goldman, in the House of Representatives, Eli Lake. He says, missing from this wall-to-wall coverage is any mention of the underlying crime that Trump falsified business records to advance his campaign. And that is a fatal flaw in the case because New York law stipulates that falsifying business records can only be charged as felonies if it's done to further another crime. So what a novel case this is that Alvin Bragg brought forward. After consulting with Joe Bama's White House, how about that? He says at the end, this is Eli Lake, in other words, Alvin Bragg is destroying our democratic system in order to save it. He's destroying the democratic system, for sure. They'll do anything, as my father has said so many times, they'll do anything to maintain their grip on power. And that's why they're so sensitive in these fights in the House of Representatives right now, because they know they've been exposed and they sense that they're losing their grip on power. So they've got to go after Trump, no matter the cost. Even if it's destroying the entire democratic system, though they're willing to do it. We will, let's see, let's not take a promo because I've been told we also have the World Watch segment for this week. So rather than have a promo, we'll kick right into the World Watch segment. And then after that is when we can finish with my father's Key of David program. What was the title of that? Two world powers are fighting for the Mediterranean Sea. So more of a prophetic focus for our second segment on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining at least me for my part today. But stay tuned as we'll go right into World Watch, followed by this week's Key of David.
Iran is ready to share nuclear technology with other nations to fight arrogant countries' dominance, the head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization said on May 7th at Iran's first international conference on nuclear sciences and technologies. Sharing nuclear technology with other nations or even terrorist groups would be an extremely provocative move against the West. The announcement came after Iran drastically increased its production of near-weapons-grade uranium, with reports saying it would need only 1 week to produce at least 3 nuclear bombs. Bible prophecy indicates that Iran will continue to push for nuclear weapons and will play a key role in instigating the next world war. To learn more, read our free booklet, The King of the South. Russia is covering up its dangerous dealings with North Korea by disabling a United Nations body overseeing sanctions on the country, the diplomat reported on May 9th. The UN 1718 Committee panel of experts ended in late April after Russia vetoed a resolution mandating its extension. Members of the UN Security Council had used the panel for 15 years to limit North Korea's ability to produce and spread nuclear weapons and other munitions. A joint statement by France, Japan, South Korea, the United Kingdom, and the United States in March said that ending the panel makes it easier for North Korea to pursue nuclear weapons in their delivery systems and helps the country to continue its unlawful activity with a sense of impunity. Russia was flagrantly violating UN sanctions on North Korea in its desperation for more weapons to use against Ukraine, the diplomat report said. The Bible prophesies that a multinational Asian alliance led by Russia will emerge in the end time and play a terrifying role in world events. Russia ending the sanctions panel as it seeks assistance from North Korea is the latest evidence that this alliance is emerging. To learn more, read Russia and China in Prophecy. Iran is gaining control of Sudan by throwing resources at multiple parties in the nation's civil war, the National Interest reported on May 7th. Should Iran succeed, its victory would add to the enemies surrounding Israel and aid Tehran's plot to cut America off from the vital Suez Canal. However, the situation poses a much greater threat to Europe, which may work to prevent Iran from conquering Sudan. Sudan's war between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, has engulfed the country since April 2023. The SAF is more radically Islamist and thus favored by Iran. Iran is also empowering Kizan, another radical Islamist group in Sudan that has ties to other Iranian proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah. Bible prophecy indicates that in the end time, Iran will work to take control of countries bordering the Red Sea. With its power around this vital region, Iran will push at its enemies, especially Europe. To learn more, read Sudan, Another Front in the Battle for the Red Sea. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Though most of the world is unaware, two world powers are fighting for the Mediterranean Sea. Understand what your Bible says about this strategic struggle between mighty kings. Next, on The Key of David with Gerald Fleury.
Greetings, everyone. Today, the power who gets control of the Mediterranean Sea is going to rule the Middle East. And Iran will have two big allies, nations. They're located on the Mediterranean Sea in Africa. Libya, already an ally of the King of the South, Iran, and they will soon be allied with Egypt. They are probably within months going to be an ally of Iran, and that's going to give them even more power on the Red Sea. If you will look at a map that we have, you'll see that very clearly. So Iran has today the control of the Red Sea, and they want very much to get control of the Mediterranean Sea, so they will also have full control of the Suez Canal, and they will have that when Egypt allies with them. But they want more than that. They want control of the Mediterranean Sea. This has always been something really important. If you look at your history, if you're in a war in that part of the world and you have control of the Mediterranean, well, you usually win. That's how important it is. There's going to be some tribulation coming that we're all going to have to see. And that's all just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. And all of this that I'm talking to you about is going to lead directly into the second coming of Jesus Christ. With God's truth, we can prove all of this and bring real joy and rejoicing into our lives because of this good news that is coming. And this is a very negative world. Good news is what we need to hear, in particular, at this time in our history. The Apostle Paul was also very familiar with the Mediterranean Sea. He covered a lot of it himself in warning Rome and the world about what was coming upon us. And he became a prisoner in Rome by speaking what I'm speaking to you today, the very truth of God. It got him in prison, and while he was there, they beheaded him. They killed the Apostle Paul right there on the Mediterranean Sea in Italy. Now, of course, Rome ruled over the Mediterranean Sea at that time. But Paul was warning them and telling them about God's way of life and God's truth. In 2 Timothy 4, he urged Timothy to arrive in Rome before winter with a warm coat and some of his scriptures. That's in 2 Timothy 4. So this is Paul's last letter, and here he was traveling on the Mediterranean Sea when he got into real trouble and was beheaded in Rome. If you look at a map that we'll have on the screen, you'll see that the northern part of Africa is located on the Mediterranean Sea, and that is Libya and Egypt. So Iran has control of the Red Sea now, and they're fighting to get control of the Mediterranean Sea. Now, what is that going to do with this in this world today. When you look at it closely, there's a lot there for us to understand. But Libya and Egypt is prophesied, those nations that still have those names. And they're right there on the Mediterranean Sea, and it certainly empowers Iran, the king of the south, quite a lot. And Iran also has terrorist proxies like the Houthis, and here's what they say. Mediterranean shipping is fair game. Iran is expanding its terrorist arm into the Mediterranean, and Germany is already part of NATO and the Mediterranean Sea. So where is that going to lead? When you look at this, Germany really has a geostrategic vision, and they've had it for a long time, and they certainly are into a lot of warfare, having started two world wars and many others before that. But here we have Germany, where if you look into their history, you know it is very central to their thinking that the Mediterranean must be a top priority and they must control it. And you can see that in their history. And right now, there is a war between Iran and Germany for the control of the Mediterranean Sea. That would be Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. But all of this is going to lead right into the 10 kings that we talk about so much. The 10 kings of the Holy Roman Empire that are going to get control of the Middle East because they get control of the Mediterranean Sea. Has a lot to do with it. This is a report from a newspaper. Iran is building drone and missile factories deep in Yemen. The Kuwait-based Al Jarida newspaper reported on Monday. This could lay the groundwork for a long-term threat to shipping from the Houthis, who have also pledged to target the Mediterranean Sea. In other words, Iran is about to get the nuclear bombs anytime in a few weeks or months. It will happen, maybe even sooner than that. They're talking like it's very, very close. And here, they're going to be facing another power that has nuclear bombs. So what is going to happen here? If you look at this closely, you can see that Germany is doing something about this that the world doesn't really understand. They keep it secret. And I'll show you a scripture in a moment where they are in an underground or an abyss. That's the way they operate. Now they're coming more and more out in the open because of their power. But if you look at what they're doing today, they're allying themselves with what is called the moderate Arabs. And that gives them all help to each other against Iran, which really is a nation that has control of the Middle East at this time, more than anybody else for sure, right now. But God gives us many warnings about all of this. It says here in one of our articles about the news, it says, in conjunction with the threat of the Yemeni Houthi, Ansar Allah group to expand its targeting of ships to include the Mediterranean Sea. Now here they're thinking about heading into the Mediterranean Sea to get control of it, of course, as part of what is called the fourth stage of escalation. A high-ranking source in the Quds Force, the external arm of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, revealed that Tehran has finally handed over advanced missiles and drones for the Yemeni group allied with it. He also sent hundreds of military experts to help the Houthis in the use of these weapons, how to use them. It's all being done back in the mountains where you can't easily get to them, and they can fire their missiles and their drones and everything else, and it's really very hard to stop it. So the Yemeni
Houthi terror group announced May 3rd they will begin targeting Israel-bound ships in the eastern Mediterranean in what they call their fourth phase of escalation. So here you have these people really getting prepared for some serious war. And they're going to get that in the Mediterranean Sea. You can be sure of it. A lot more than they've gotten already in the Red Sea, but they essentially control the Red Sea along with Iran. So this is all going to be difficult. But I want to show you something, and we need to look at a little bit of Germany's history to understand what they think and what they're doing in the Mediterranean Sea, and have been doing for some 21 years at least. So let's go back into that history, and I want to give you a quote here from what was the president of the EU at that time. And he had this to say in 2003, he said, but in the long run, Balkans belong strictly to the EU. Now, this is after they had the war for two states in the Balkans. Germany announced that, and it caused a civil war in the Balkans. And so Germany wanted to very much to control the Balkans. And so they really got the U.S. to use 75% of the power to conquer the Balkans for Germany. After that, this president says, but in the long run, Balkans belong strictly to the EU. Now, this is the Holy Roman Empire talking, really, the 10 kings that are about to come. And here, Germany is boasting because they now control it, and it was our power that made it happen. And at first, the U.S. was very much against that, but then they caved in to Germany, just like the UN did and the rest of Europe. Germany already is back and with power, but they don't talk about it too much until lately they're letting everybody know more about it, because many Europeans want them to be powerful. Mr. Prodi also said, he went on to add that an EU policy for the Mediterranean area was in the making. Oh, it's in the making, and that was 21 years ago. And they were making it all happen that they were getting control of the Mediterranean Sea. Well, we have this map we'll show you, but if you look at the map of the Balkans there, Germany recognized Slovenia and Croatia. And that brought about a civil war there over the Serbs mainly, or what was before that, the Yugoslavia. Now they've got control of all the Balkans there, and there was something else that they wanted very badly, that they needed to fulfill their vision. Notice there on the map, it talks about the coming out of Italy and the Balkans, the Adriatic Sea, and that leads right out into the Mediterranean Sea. So you can see why they're there and why they wanted the Balkans. This is a great world vision they have, just as they've had in the past. This is going to be what the seventh head and the last head of the Holy Roman Empire is going to be doing from now on. And it's going to shock the world when they see how much power they really have, and nuclear bombs on top of that. So this takes them right out into the Mediterranean Sea. But then notice what we wrote about that. If Malta joined the EU, it would become a gateway. Oh, yeah, a big gateway, a sea gate, the mighty one and the best one in the world. For Europe, Malta has been described as a springboard to the whole Mediterranean region, and especially to the African and Middle Eastern shores. Yes, on the African shores, where there are two big nations allied with Iran. Egypt hasn't quite got there yet, but they will very soon. You'll see that in prophecy, Bible prophecy. And you need to believe it, because it's going to happen, just like we promised it would with Libya, and it already has there. So this is going to give them quite a lot of power. That is, Iran will have quite a lot of power because of those two nations and also their control of the Red Sea. And when they get control of Egypt, Egypt also is on the Red Sea. One side of it is on the Red Sea, and that's where the Suez Canal is. And that's going to be something very valuable to Iran as soon as they ally themselves with Egypt. Now, this is all prophecy, and we've been prophesying this for over 50 years to everybody, the whole world. Malta is now an EU member, so that means Malta really gives them a lot of control over the Mediterranean Sea, and you can see that on a map we'll have for you. But I also mentioned about Cyprus. They're going to figure very prominently in the power of Germany and taking over the Mediterranean Sea because they control the economy of Cyprus. And Cyprus is just a few miles from Iran and Jerusalem. So that is another important strategic interest that Germany has, and most people don't even know much about this. Germany is getting control, along with the Holy Roman Empire, the Mediterranean Sea that they have ruled throughout history almost. They didn't in the finally in World War II. It ended with them losing those parts of the world as with their military. Anyhow, that you can see what a strategy they have. And this is building the seventh head of the Holy Roman Empire. Here's what Herbert Armstrong said in 1956. I'll just paraphrase it. This is all explained and right there in Revelation 17. I'll try to get to some of it if I have time. What he wrote, Herbert Armstrong, was written in 1956, and that's over 60 years ago. And he was telling you that this was going to happen, much of it very specifically. So even a strong man is coming on the scene to really rule over the Holy Roman Empire. Here is another quote from Herbert Armstrong. He said, "What the world does not realize is that undercover, secret planning is proceeding furiously, uncovered by the news media and unknown by the public." See, here's a third world superpower rising on the world scene, and the people really know very little about it. The public knows very little about it. They had these great four world ruling empires that Daniel and Revelation talk about. And the fourth one was Rome. And now, after Rome fell, the first Holy Roman Empire was established. And now we've had six of them since that time, about close to 1,500 years. And now the seventh one is coming on the scene with 10 kings that we have been prophesying literally for over 75 years. And you see it all coming to pass. And when it was first prophesied, people scoffed, but they don't anymore. They don't do that anymore. So if you want to know more about that, write for our book on the United States and Britain and prophecy, and it'll explain all of that to you. Now, let me show you here something in Daniel. In Daniel 11 and verse 40, it says, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind." This is at the time of the end. This is for the end time. Notice and ask yourself, well, do I believe this? I hope you do, because every word of it's going to be fulfilled. And we've been talking about that for many years. But anyhow, the king of the north shall come against him, that is Iran, and the king of the south, And this is Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. The king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land. That's peacefully entering into the glorious land or Jerusalem. And they're going to be betrayed. That's what's going to happen if they don't listen and heed God's message. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand. Then verse 42 says here, he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. You're going to see that in a short time. Just watch, and you're going to see it become an ally of Iran. That's what your Bible says. It's going to happen, and you need to really watch that closely. These are prophecies being fulfilled before our eyes today. Verse 43 says, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. So they're going to get control of Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. They haven't gotten control of Ethiopia yet, but they're close to it as well. You'll see that happen also. You'll see here, if you go ahead in verse 45, this comes to an end and nothing is going to help this powerful Holy Roman Empire. In Revelation 17 and verse 8, it talks about the beast that you saw was and is not. It just went underground and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. Went underground, went into that abyss, talking about here. And then verse 10, it says, here's where Herbert Armstrong came on the scene. And there are seven kings, five are fallen and one is. Well, yeah, five of the Holy Roman Empires are fallen. And Herbert Armstrong was talking about the sixth one coming on the scene, and it did. And it goes on to say, Mr. Armstrong coming on the scene began to understand all of these prophecies, and the other is not yet come, but it is rising now. In other words, that final Holy Roman Empire is coming on the scene and has already done that. And you can almost see it fulfilled totally right now. Because those kings are about to solidify their power and let one strong man of Europe rule over the Holy Roman Empire, and they are going to become a superpower before our eyes. And notice what happens. Verse 12, and the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. It's a very short time. And they're going to clash with Russia and China. And there's more about that you can understand from our booklet on the China and Russia in prophecy. Verse 14, these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. This is like, again, the Apostle Paul was talking about these many of these prophecies and warning them at that time. But because he spoke the truth, they wanted to kill him, and they did. And God allowed it as a witness against them. But think about this. Jesus Christ is going to come and destroy all of these evil nations, and we're going to have peace forever. Until next week, this is Gerald Flurry. Goodbye, friends.